Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, and welcome to another edition of Visions. I am Yudalee Wickham Ashby, and today I am pleased as punch and some more to be chatting with Patrick Lafayette, all the way from Jamaica, a man who has done so much in his short time on Earth. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you ever so much for having me, and I say greetings and salutations to your audience also.
So, Patrick, let's start at the beginning. You were born in Jamaica, and...
Yes. I was born in Jamaica. I had vision loss at age 16, detached retinas, and at that time, I made a transition to the United States for further, treatment, I guess, to see if anything could be done to at least recover some of my vision. It proved unsuccessful because the detachments were basically severe. I was a high diver, swimmer, and too many dives for the day, too many swims. You know, when you're a kid, I was 16. And I guess my over-exuberance and enthusiasm for that day and just hanging out and too much. However, when I made the transition to the United States, I was given the option by family members. Either you have the choice of staying here and being rehabilitated or, going back to Jamaica and doing it there. But the greater opportunity, of course, would have been in the U.S. So I made that transition from that stage. Until basically present, I've always been a Caribbean person, although I've resided for most of my life in the U.S., and whatever knowledge and stuff that I've accrued as a an advocate for self-empowerment, I've always tried to pass that knowledge on to folks in similar conditions as myself. So, I went through the whole process of college and et cetera, got a first degree in communication arts. But my main structural focus was, again, as I say, self-empowerment. And I got to that in, I would say, 1988, 89, with my introduction to JAWS, Job Access with Speech, the text-to-speech screen reader for the PC computer at that time. So that was my whole introduction into everything and the beginning of my journey as a blind person on a recovery level of independence and self-empowerment.
So speak a bit more about your journey in becoming more empowered after losing your sight, because emotionally that would also have been a new transition for you.
Oh, well, good one. Significantly so. It was... I didn't really have a teenage life, because, at age 16, that's when a teenager really starts popping as a teenager, self-definition and everything else,
Mm-hmm.
It was a transitional period for me, and not only was it a new state for me physically, I guess the thing that sort of helped cushion it, if I were to target anything, it was a new condition for me, but also the transition to a whole new environment, a whole new society, a whole new realm of living. Both combined were like shock, but also bomb.
Right.
It was a salve, but it was also a shock. I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Yes,
where that is concerned. Because it was losing my sight and then leaving from an environment for which I was fully accustomed to an environment which was brand new for me. So the two combined, although they might have had their negative realm, they also had their positive realm, because it gave me an opportunity with people around me that gave me love and support. It gave me an opportunity to explore and grow in a new sense. Yeah? And being... given knowledge, of things, because one of my biggest woes, and I'll tell you this, when losing my sight, one of my biggest woes, because I always had a voracious appetite when it came to reading. I love reading. And when you lose your sight, man, and you can't read, what? You know, that was like a big bang for me.
I know the feeling because I'm a...
Yeah. But then there was this gentleman, I'll never forget him as long as I live, August Bierman. He was 91 at the time, and he taught me Braille from the Industrial Home for the Blind in Long Island, New York. And this was way back when. And Gus gave me a whole new realm of knowledge experience because I could read again. Mm-hmm. And then I was introduced to talking books on cassettes and on those floppy, vinyl-looking stuffies. And that was a whole new world for me. I must tell you that at one stage I was going through like 54 books a month. Sometimes I was reading like 3-4 different books at once. I was crazy. You know, it's a whole new world. Like, wow. So, yeah, man. And it's good to have support, family support. It's good to have encouragement and people who didn't treat me as if I was blind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? If I needed something, I had some people around me that some people would have said that they were a bit rough on me and stuff. But no, they weren't. You want to find it? Go over there and find it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to help you. You know, if you really need help, then they'll step in, you know, of course. But they made sure that there was no chance for me to go into self-pity.
Right.
And
you learned how
and all of that kind of stuff.
Right.
And that's
so
important.
So that would have led to some independence and some confidence building as well.
Yes. So treatment, you know, your environment plays a great role in your growth and development. It's like if you put an alligator or a crocodile in a small container, he won't grow beyond. You take him out and put him in a big pond and he'll become a huge creature.
Correct.
So we adapt to our environment and to the people around us and stuff like that. So if you get the support and the encouragement, then yes. And that's what happened to me. I got support and encouragement from family members and friends and stuff like that. And I'm not the kind of person to sit down and let grass grow under my feet. I'm going to move. One of the things I did aspire to was college, because I still had dreams of doing certain things, most especially a law career. I initially wanted a law career. And that's one of the first things I was pursuing. I went to Syracuse University under a criminal justice major. I transferred to Marist College, also in New York. But then I started experiencing a different kind of prejudice. And not just skin color prejudice, but also blind prejudice. Certain people found... You get blocked in a certain way based on the fact that I was black, blind, and yes, brilliant and beautiful. That's me. And confident in myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got challenged where that is concerned. But then my focus changed into communication because it was a parallel subject for me. And that's when I delve more into communications, broadcasting, and the media.
Right.
And that's where my love basically blossomed after that time. I found my footing. I found my calling then in that realm as opposed to the legal realm, which I thought I wanted to do.
Right. So you completed your degree in communications art. And where did that lead you employment-wise?
Well... during my junior year in my first degree, I did an internship. You know, you get an internship for a year in your junior year. I came to Jamaica for that summer And I took in the radio scene in Jamaica. There were two major stations at the time, and AM was more the forefront than FM. Both stations had AM and FM frequencies, but the FM frequency was more secondary. I came to Jamaica. I checked out the you know, the broadcast arena, if you will. Mm-hmm. Sent in applications for internship, and Radio Jamaica, as opposed to Jamaica Broadcasting Corporation, responded. Mr. Lester Spaulding, the CEO and chairman at the time, invited me in, and I went for an interview. He didn't know I was blind. That's a funny thing, too. And I used all of my senses. I went with my girlfriend at the time for the interview, and when the secretary told us, you know, it's okay for you now to see Mr. Spaulding, Mr. Lafayette, you know, we both got up. We went to the door. She ushered us in. Mr. Spaulding was sitting behind his chair, and of course, he stood to greet me. You know what the first thing I did, right, Eulalie?
Put your hand out.
Before him. I beat him to the punch.
Oh.
Because if he had put his hand out, I'd have to be searching for it.
Right, so you put your hand out.
I beat him to the punch.
Mm-hmm.
So when he took my hand, of course, he's shaking it to tell me, how are you, good morning? But he's also going to usher me to the seat. Yes, of course.
Right.
By pointing or directing me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't let go of that hand. So I felt his body movement to understand where the chair was.
Okay.
You get it?
Yes, got it. Got it.
So with a little movement, I felt the chair with the right side of my my knee, sort of, you know. And you know, I played the gallant. And I ushered my girlfriend first to the seat, and she sort of, you know, surreptitiously moved me around. And, you know,
right,
we had a routine. So
right.
They didn't know I couldn't see through the whole interview. Yeah, I engaged them, eye contact, the whole nine, yeah? He invited the program manager in. He invited a few other people in. And then they took me down to the studio to do an audition, and I banged it. I went back to Marist, and I told them that Radio Jamaica would approve of an internship. And I came back to Jamaica in 1984 and changed the whole spectrum of radio in Jamaica. I changed the whole dynamic.
Right.
When I came back, there was a new broadcast program manager for RJR, the FM side, Capital Stereo, it was called. And by the time I got things kicking and rolling and everything, that station was changed to Fame FM in 1984, based on me.
Mm-hmm.
I was the lead person. They made room for me in the middle of the afternoon. I must tell you the story, though. Yeah, you might find this very interesting. When I came back for the internship, the new program manager was Don Topping. He wasn't in the first meeting. He didn't know nothing about me. And here I come, a blind guy. He didn't know what the heck to do with me. So you know what he did? He put me way in the middle of the graveyard shift in the night, so if anything bad went on, no one would hear.
You're right.
So I was on from midnight to 5, weekdays, in every single night. After the second week of my being on radio, the radio station started getting a whole lot of complaints. People calling and blocking the reception.
Okay.
Yeah, they were complaining because their workers, their staff were falling asleep on the job because they were up all night listening to someone you have on the radio.
Okay.
So that's when the station decided to take real notice of me.
Uh-huh.
And they renamed the station to Fame and stuck me in the middle of the afternoon.
Okay.
I was hotter than sliced bread back then, my sister.
Okay. Great to know.
Every hour of every show was sponsored by a different sponsor. First time in the history of. In 16 months of operation as Fame FM, they made more money than Capital Stereo did in 16 years of operation.
Fantastic.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Change the whole spectrum, the whole everything.
And this
blind guy in the middle of the day doing things that sighted people were bugging out on. I was mixing and scratching and DJing and rapping and doing all kinds of stuff.
So this just illustrates our contribution, how easy we can contribute to our own national development.
Oh, yes.
So, Patrick, how did you scratch and mix and do all of that?
Listen, man, I attribute everything to God, yeah? And I told people it's a buck up. It's a buck up. It's accidental. It's only God doing this. I'm just an instrument. I don't take credit for none of it, my sister. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then in 1989, I went back to the States. I decided to give radio a break for a while, you know. I was going through a whole lot of transition within myself also. And I was introduced to JAWS, screen reader. It was 1.5, version 1.5 at the time. And it saved me. It gave me a different level of sanity and scope. And when I got that knowledge, the first thing I did was come back to Jamaica with it. Went to the Jamaica Society for the Blind, brought even a computer with me and left it there, and decided to hold classes at the Jamaica Society for the Blind. I had a laptop, a desktop, and I said, anyone who wants to learn, come on. I had 25 students with just those two things. And I taught them. Most of the folks who are computer literate in Jamaica, they got a knowledge from me.
Right.
Yeah, man. Hickswell Douglas, Dr. Douglas, the former minister, Floyd Morris. So many people who are blind in this country, I've had the pleasure and privilege of passing on the knowledge to. Then later on, with mobile technology, in the 90s, remember Mobile Speak?
Right.
That was for the Symbian phones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the Nokia phones and stuff like that. I brought that knowledge and educated the community also with that. And then later on in the realm of the iPhone, I did the same. One of the strange and remarkable things with my life, though, I must tell you, my friend. In 2017, I'm on Messenger, and there's like a female sort of trolling me. And I'm saying, why is this female trolling me? But then she came out one day with a request. She says she's really doing, she's a student, and she's doing a paper on disability, and if she could access me for some information. And that did it for me. Once you mention disability, you know, mm-hmm. I try to do as much as I can for my community. So on Messenger, I communicated with her, and she said, excellent, you know, but before I ask you any questions, could I have you speak to my professor? Because, you know, we'd like to keep it within the school framework and all of that. So I said, sure. So she gave me her professor's communication, and we exchanged communication. And I got an email from her professor, supposedly. And you know what that email was from? Apple Corporation.
Apple.
I said, what? And it was a non-disclosure agreement. I was in New York, my wife and kids, they were in Jamaica at the time. And after I signed it, Apple sent for my family.
Wow.
And while in New York, they sent a whole team to my apartment. They rearranged my entire house. Spent like about 5 days there, and they did a remarkable video that's very, very well used within Apple's realm. Actually, I was invited to Apple Park in 2019, and discovered that my video is one of the most used thing that they do to in-house presentation at their stores. It's like the first go-to thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's still on YouTube. It's entitled Design for Patrick and the letter L. Design for Patrick L. They have it in both the audio described version and the regular version of that. But it involves myself using Apple's tools to do my work. I also do production, music, commercials, anything with audio, man. I'm an audio crazy person. I spend a lot of time producing stuff. I've been archiving our musical history for Jamaica over the past 16, 17 years, where I've been interviewing a lot of the cornerstone members of our music culture. Some have passed, but thankfully, blessedly, I've captured their story. There are a few that I've missed to my saddened heart, but you know, it's a part of life. So I've been dedicating my life to the preservation of the Caribbean culture in general, but the Jamaican music culture in specifically. I'm
fantastic.
Trying to partner with other folks on the eastern side of the Caribbean, because we need to do this. Yeah, it's necessary.
Yes, we do.
And most especially in this time with this pandemic that we have, where our elderly community is so vulnerable. And a lot of our history, as you know, is oral. We don't really document things the way we should. So this oral history that we have to try and preserve it as best as possible. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful. And I really have to compliment you, Patrick, for the fantastic work you've done over the years, not only within the disabled community, but right now, as you're pointing out, within our own Caribbean community in helping to preserve a beautiful heritage that can easily be lost.
True indeed.
And I know that you have also been awarded some awards for the prestigious work that you're doing. So tell us about those.
It causes me to blush sometimes, you know. You see, one of my things, I try not to jump up and down too much and big up my chest and all of that, because you do more work on the quiet than you do making noise. Yeah?
Right.
In 2018, an organization in New York, TTO, along with VP Records, recognized me for my contribution to the preservation of the music culture. And I must tell you, I didn't even know that was going to occur. I was invited. I thought I was just going to be a member of the audience until I was called on stage. I was looking around like, who, me? And in honesty, that was the first time anything like that has ever happened to me in my career in the over 35 years that I've been doing what I've been doing, because no one really knows. I try to keep it like that. It's just best to do what you do. But it's called the Shire Catapult Residency between Fresh Milk of Barbados, Kingston Creative, and the AFJ, American Friends of Jamaica. They have a residency program, and it was granted to 10 individuals across the region. I was one of these individuals receiving the award from the Shire Catapult, and it humbles me, but it heartens me for the fact that, you know, putting in all of this work for all of these years and getting recognized for it, it's really heartening.
Good.
It's humbling, and I just thank God for the blessings of being able to input all of that back into. My mom always told me, when you the state in which you come and see the world, make sure when you go it's in a better state than when you came and saw it. So I'm just trying to do my best and impress upon my children also to do their best, and everyone else around me, to make sure that the world that we live in is habitable with love. Yeah?
Correct.
because that's what conquers all, you know. Love will do it for everything. I discovered that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man.
And I know that you have an internet radio, so share with us how this came about.
Well, you're good. I'm the last of four children, three boys, one girl. My second sibling, Christopher, he was a musicologist, collector, and a computer brainiac. Well, he passed in 2013. From cancer, and I wanted to honor him and keep his memory. And when he would give either cassettes or CDs later on to his friends of his special mixes, he would call it like Chris Mix Soul or Chris Mix Reggae or Chris Mix Soca. So I decided to use my knowledge as a broadcaster and radio communicator, also a computer enthusiast myself, and everything else. I put together an internet radio station in his honor called Chris Mix Radio, chrismixradio.com. And we're now into our sixth, just about, 5.5 to 6 years operation. We're up to 680,000 people at our highest peak. We have affiliation with 21 other similar networks. Our broadcast signal is carried every Friday evening into Jamaica from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m., 8 solid hours of that. And we incorporate all of this presentation with four other stations, so I don't hog the spotlight. Everybody comes through Chris Mix Radio, but for the 8 hours, they get Patrick. They get another station with Francine Chin in New York. They get another station with Clinton Lindsay in Florida. They get another station with Daddy Ernie in London. They get another station with Ian Elegant in New York City. So for the 8 hours, we give them various presentations and content. We only keep it Caribbean for the publishing. So we keep the publishing in terms of the music that we play. All the publishing rights for the music that we play, we keep it Caribbean. So we are heard all the way to South Africa, Korea. We're doing decent where that is concerned, I must say. And with the whole paradigm shift now because of this COVID thing, people are paying more attention to internet access and internet radio and stuff like that. So that's what we do. We try to preserve the culture and present it on the station and on the website, chrismixradio.com.
Well, Patrick, time has got up with us, and I must invite you back again because we have not even talked about how you met your wife and being a father and all that family life and personal stuff. So it really has been a pleasure talking with you and learning about all that you have accomplished to demonstrate that with sight impairment, you still have been able to achieve tremendous feats. And I want to say we are proud of you and we are thankful that you have continued to contribute not only to the development of your comrades with disabilities, but to your society and by extension, the Caribbean society as well. So thank you very much for sharing with us today.
Thank you ever so much for having me. And God bless you and your listeners, yeah?
Thank you very much. You have been listening to Visions with me, Udalee Wickham Ashby, and today my special guest, Patrick Lafayette, broadcaster, internet radio owner, and so much more. So remember, you can reach out to me on 1-246-269-9660. You can WhatsApp me on that as well. You can reach me via Starcom 1-246-430-7300. Or you can email me, visionsbarbados@gmail.com. That's visionsbarbados@gmail.com. And you can listen to this and past episodes by going to the VOB 929.com. www.vision.com website and looking for the Visions link, and you can listen once again. So until next week, be safe, love yourself, and love your neighbor.